Okay, so...
Okay, I have your slides on the VNC window.
Okay. I guess last month, Peter and the rest of the group tasked me with exploring what people are thinking of in terms of the future of metadata. And I was a little surprised by the responses I was getting. So if we kind of move, let's see. So if you just go to slide two, just as a review. So really, I think everyone kind of agrees that when we're talking about using ontology metadata within within OOR, we're definitely going to be basing it off of OMP. I don't think that we've heard anybody in the group kind of voicing any concerns with OMP, and OMP is used by several groups around the world, at Stanford and various places in Europe. There's a typo on the title. All this, but I'll send a corrected version of the slides. So just as a little summary here, right? OMP is the ontology metadata vocabulary. It's an ontology written in OWL, and it provides all the terms that people want to use when actually describing an ontology. And so there are terms for describing the structural metadata of the ontology, more descriptive kinds of information, and then kind of finally the administrative parts of it. And I'm not going to go into OMP because I think people are mainly fairly familiar with it. I think Natasha said that she had actually given a presentation about OMP to the group at some earlier point. I should have linked back to that particular.
I actually added those resources at the reference section of this page. So
there it is. I see it. Yes, thank you. Yeah, Peter Haas. Yes, great. Thanks. When I went to, if you look at slide three, this was some of the responses I was getting. Current users of OMP are very happy with OMP as it's being used, and there are no plans for significant extensions. So it's kind of a little surprised at this, but if you actually look at the documentation for OMP, I mean, they really do say that, you know, OMP was designed both from a theoretical basis, but also by looking at various papers, and I've posted some of the references here explicitly, that we're looking at, focusing on ontology, reusability, and shareability. So they were really motivated by the use cases, and OMP has been able to support all of these use cases. And so since everyone's pretty happy with what's there, let's say they don't really see any need to have any further extensions at this time. Now, I'll qualify this in a few slides. But this was against the response as well. We've already presented OMP, and there's nothing new, so why are we having another panel? So perhaps after a little bit of email discussion with Peter, maybe what we need to do is maybe do a little bit of an introspective look within our own little group here and ask ourselves, why do we believe that extensions to OMP are needed? This is what happens when you do these slides the last minute. So we have to ask ourselves then, right? So what use cases do we have in OOR to motivate such extensions? And another question, you know, is again, how has anyone actually used OMP, for example, within the sandbox that we have? Have people actually been using OMP? And if so, what issues have they encountered? So have people been bumping up against certain things where they say, oh, we really need to have the following metadata, and it's not there? Now, when I say that OMP, you know, people are not planning to get significant extensions, I mean, that doesn't mean they're not planning any extensions. So, for example, one of the relations within OMP is talking about the ontology representation language, and say, for example, you know, common logic isn't there. Well, it's not a big extension. It's more of an update to the standard to add that. When I'm talking about extensions to OMP, I mean, I think we're really talking about more kinds of significant kinds of things, like new relations, new classes, new kinds of ontology metadata. So, again, so these are kind of two questions, I think, that we need to ask ourselves, and really focusing then on these use cases. So not only to say, well, we need, to use the use cases to say we need the following kinds of metadata that's not currently being captured and can't really be augmented to the current OMP. Now,
yeah, that's far off. Yeah. Go ahead. I just have some feedback.
Sorry?
I was just going to give some feedback, but if you're not done, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no, please interrupt me at any time. Because this is not meant to be a formal, you know, presentation. I'm mainly just trying to get some material up here, and then we can have the discussion. So if you kind of move to slide five, so just from a perspective of our project here in Toronto, CALORI, the Common Logic Ontology Repository, we have noticed, I mean, there is a bit of a difference in perspective. Now, definitely, whatever we use in CALORI, we will be using ONV. So particularly for the administrative metadata and some aspects of the descriptive metadata, people can argue about how structural metadata makes sense in terms of common logic ontology, so that might be another discussion. But one of the things that we found a bit different is within our work with repositories and common logic ontologies is that there's more emphasis on the relationships between ontologies within the repository as opposed to metadata that's describing a particular ontology in isolation. And so we have different notions of extension. So extensions where you have different modules that are kind of using the same underlying lexicon, the same terms, but they're adding different axioms. And so if you add some axioms, you can infer new things. That's a non-conservative extension. Sometimes you can combine different modules together, and you're kind of reasoning with that combination, and it's really kind of a pure combination. It's a conservative kind of extension. These other two kinds of interpretation are where you have ontologies that are using different lexicons, maybe different sets of primitives, but they're still equivalent. So examples of this would be using time points or time intervals, using a geometry that has lines and planes and points. Another ontology only has points. One debate that still never seems to get resolved on the ontologue forum is 3D versus 4D, whether those are actually mutually interpretable in each other. And then most recently, there's some work that we've been doing called reducibility, and we have a paper we submitted to a special issue of applied ontology. I suppose I could post that for limited release within the group if people want to read that. So if you move to slide six, I think one of the other sorts of things that came out of this was the notion of modularity, and I hope to get some people from Bremen, like Phil Masofsky or Oliver Kutzka, to kind of join us and say a few words, but scheduling didn't work out for March. But one of the things that we really focus on is this notion of modularity. So in addition to the relationships between different ontologies within a repository, we also tend to have a kind of an internal structure to an ontology that you can decompose it into smaller modules. And within CALORI, we have this notion of a hierarchy of theories that have the same ontology, that have the same language, and then these hierarchies get related to each other. And you build ontologies out of pieces out of each of these different hierarchies. And so it's not clear exactly how ONV would handle this. Moving to slide seven, another point within ONV that we have found interesting within our particular project, and it hasn't really been discussed too much within OOR, which is why I wanted to raise it here, was within OMV, and there is a particular relation that talks about different types of ontologies. And within the current OMV, there are these five different types, upper level, core, domain, task, and application. And they have some informal descriptions. There's a couple of paper citations for where these types came from. So one question again for us, if we treat this as an introspective exercise initially, is how does this compare with what we're doing in OR in terms of the sandbox, for example, or in terms of other ontologies that people in our group are working on? Are these really sufficient for OOR? Are we finding that there's perhaps some ambiguity? It would be nice to be able to see if there are actually maybe some more formal foundations for these distinctions. We've been playing around with some within CALORI, but some of these seem to be kind of inherently more kind of informal or more pragmatic, I suppose you could say, rather than logical. Because one of the other things that we're noticing too is there's kind of different perspectives, different ways, especially when you have a modular kind of repository, different ways of combining the modules. So you could say, for example, like an ontology like the TSL is modular because it has, you know, it has a kind of a core theory, and it has another theory for subactivities, another theory for concurrency, etc. And so you could kind of say, oh, I'm combining those together. But then you could say, well, that's kind of a domain of process, or I could have a domain of time. But, you know, you could also kind of reconfigure those modules. Somebody else could take the theory of subactivities from PSL and not be part of PSL, but combine it and make something else. Maybe it's not even a purely process ontology. So the ability to kind of rapidly reconfigure modules into new packages and then give that a name and somehow capture all those relationships, it's not clear whether or not OMB handled that. And so, for example, we're finding that what OMB was calling, core ontologies, seems to be something, what we find is that it's kind of a different way of doing the combination than when you're looking at domain, task, and application. Or domain and applications tend to be a little more specialization way, whereas core and tasks, ontologies tend to be more of this kind of reconfiguring building blocks in different ways. So just as a summary then on slide 8, I think we really need to provide, as our group needs to provide some use cases that motivate some specific proposals. Now, I mentioned earlier, like, there was a caveat to saying there are no extensions planned to OMB. It turns out that perhaps maybe there is a little bit of a expectation clash here in some of what extension means. First of all, versioning, I think, is still something that is something that's up for discussion. There's a lot of issues there. OMB has versioning capabilities in its descriptions. I'm not sure whether or not that's the final story, but I think people within OMB are kind of thinking that independently. And when I was talking with Natasha Noy about, this idea of these relationships between ontologies, that's a little closer to what they usually call ontology merging and alignment. And so they would say, well, you know, that's kind of out of the scope of OMB. So although there may be work that will be done on providing some more standard terms for doing ontology merging alignment, it wouldn't be part of OMB per se. It might end up being a different effort, a whole separate independent effort. And so that might be something that we also maybe decide to do is to, keep OMB as it is, but then maybe focus on some of these other more open issues and maybe start some other efforts along those lines. So that's just a few comments, a few points, and we can, I was hoping to be able to discuss this for the rest of the meeting.
Michael, we talked about bringing up a notion of configuration, so that sounds like that might be kind of what you intend by having these selections of modules.
Okay, so I must have missed that meeting. So what was this notion of configuration? How was that arising?
Let's see, is Todd and Ken present? I think actually Todd brought it up initially.
They're both present.
We didn't know whether we want to call it packages, because it seemed like it was more than really a package, but so we kind of talked about maybe naming it a configuration.
Okay.
And there may be some complication to that. In other words, there may be pragmas associated with it, or something similar, policy snippet.
Okay, so this is the notion of configuration, okay.
And that might be, because I do think that's going to be true, that there may be multiple modules. They could be the same modules, but some are selected and some are not in a specific domain, so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Todd, you have your hand up there.
Michael, your issue about the extensions of OMB and trying to do everything a priori, I find troublesome. I understand that OMB, I guess it's the standard, is that correct?
I don't think it's been adopted as a standard.
Oh, good. Then in which case, I would say I wouldn't get too hung up on the fact that whoever developed originally isn't complaining any extensions. I think we will discover new use cases as we move along, and we shouldn't get tied down to, well, this is a particular version that we absolutely have to use.
Okay, granted. But I was just a little surprised when I kind of approached the people who have been using OMB that that they're very happy with it. And they're happy with it because it's supporting their use cases. So I was expecting maybe something where they were a little more, this is where things are right now, and there's a bunch of use cases that we've identified that aren't being supported, but they feel the other way around. So, I think it'll be up to us then to try to identify some of these use cases.
Well, we'll have to do that as we go along, but I really don't want to get locked into this absolute pre-agreement, and we can't change things without jumping over huge hurdles. Now,
I might have overstated
that. That's great, but I haven't studied their use cases.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm just overstating things. I thought that it was a little more agreement that OMB kind of provides a reasonable basis. I don't agree that it's kind of all there is to do. I'm pretty sure we'll find extensions for it, and even within Calori, we're bumping up against that.
But it also suggests that we need another method in our specification. That method would be to actually retrieve the ontology being used for making calls to the OOR.
So, but that isn't just using the existing metadata to do the retrieval?
Again?
Isn't that using existing metadata to do the retrieval?
Yes, but if someone comes to the OOR and they want to understand how the metadata is structured, they should be able to get that ontology. Maybe that's not a necessary function. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it would be an issue if people are looking for ontologies with particular features and, like, say those aren't even relations within something like OMB, right? So, there are these extensions where it's like, we want to have a common logic ontology, and common logic's not one of the ontology representation languages. So that's an easy fix.
Right.
But some of these other relationships that we were using in Calori just don't fit there at all.
Yeah.
My chat connection keeps disconnecting, so I'll just kind of talk a second here.
Okay.
I saw Peter's hand is up. Go ahead, Peter. Why don't you do that first?
Okay. First of all, I draw on the chat. I had the link and want to draw people's attention to the few references that I pulled up. But essentially, the first one is what we talked about when we talked about metadata during the Ontology Summit 2008 and captured into the communique. But the second one, which I think is important, is that on the recently adopted OOR IPR policy, this was put in, I think prompted by Mike Dean, is that it's stipulated that any content contribution should specify an IPR license, and then it is also required to maintain in content contribution a set of metadata, which is controlled by the gatekeeping requirements. So, as I typed on the chat, is assuming metadata requirements implementing into gatekeeping and so on is a key piece of the puzzle. Maybe our use case is actually, since Michael was asking about use cases, how do we move from sandbox to production OOR? So far, we've only got a sandbox, and it's actually not very healthy because people are starting to upload and do, I would say, semi-serious things on it. And by the time we run production, all those URIs will be broken. So we should try to come up with a production instance as quickly as possible. And I think the OOR, the metadata requirement, as well as implementing those into gatekeeping, is the bottleneck now. So if we want a use case scenario, then let's maybe consider using this as our use case scenario and drive the discussion. And at the end of the day, if we know exactly what we need to do between now and running a production OOR, that might be useful.
That's a good good place to start. Yeah, because it's kind of a minimality approach, right? So at minimally, we need to be able to support that kind of metadata that supports that gatekeeping. And I just kind of put into the chat room here. If we find a use case that requires metadata that in some way conflicts with OMB, then there's going to be some problems. But if all the use cases we have either use OMB as it is or simply require new kinds of metadata, then we can adopt OMB but just propose our own extensions. So I like Peter's idea of kind of take a more minimal approach, only what's necessary.
I actually wasn't recommending a minimalist approach, I'm just recommending that we actually put some real need into sort of driving the discussion, because we really need to run get a production OR started as quickly as we can, and also in response to Todd's comment. I actually didn't interpret Michael's remark about OMV being and nobody trying to extend it being that we need to stick with, but rather, I mean, I think it speaks well to the comprehensiveness of those people who originally drawn up OMV. I think they did a great job.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I intended to say in a very clumsy way.
I agree with that short conversation that we should probably move out with what we have currently, but I think that there are things that we know that we will need, so maybe this configuration. But also, we've talked about mappings as first-class objects, too. So essentially having some metadata associating ontology to ontology or ontology to vocabulary would be useful, because if you searched just the metadata on an ontology, you'd like to see, well, this has already been mapped to X or Y, or collect all those that have been mapped, consistently across each other. I don't see that, at least in the Peter Haas version of the metadata here. So that would be one possible addition, a mapping. Another might be, something like the evaluation / review marker. In other words, this has been reviewed by X or, whatever the standard is, or evaluated by X. That might be useful information to know about an ontology. And then I think that, what you're getting at, Michael, with modules, I think those will be necessary. And it seems like what will also be necessary then, and which you already have in Colora, is module interrelationships. So that's kind of not present either.
Mm-hmm. I think there is, within OMB, there is something about ontology reviewer.
Okay. I don't see that here, so let's see. I see party and person organization syntax.
Like, for example, there's something like consistent according to reasoner, so you can do that sort of evaluation. And one of the users of the reviewer attributes in the evaluation extension. So, definitely one of the roles is an ontology reviewer, party responsible for evaluating an ontology.
Okay, I guess this picture is incomplete, so I should probably go to Mike's current description here. Yeah, I don't see it in Peter's presentation.
That one doesn't seem to include reviewer either, so it may not be up to date.
Yeah, I'm using the OMB report 2.4.1. copyright 2009, March 2009. Hmm. I wonder if maybe they got rid of it then. I would think the SourceForge description would be the newer one.
This one is described as version 2.4, so at least in version numbers, it's fairly...
Yeah, so maybe recently added.
Although it's also dated 2007.
Yeah. I mean, one other issue, too, is the discussion of versioning. There's a lot of other things that pop up when we're talking about ontology versioning, because there's a sense of versions in which you're treating it as an artifact, just as any other kind of software file, where, oh, there was a mistake here, you know, or that sort of idea. But then there are kind of different logical versions. And I think what we found sometimes is that logical versions end up just being new theories. So you kind of realize, oh, this one particular axiom, we could add this, an axiom, and that would create a new version. But you could also say, well, if we add this axiom, that actually creates kind of a new module. And so there's kind of a conflation of the kind of maintaining the software version in a subversion sort of repository, but also being able to talk about, well, these are two different ontologies, and they're kind of distinguished by their axioms.
Yeah, that's kind of more of a semantic versioning, I guess, right?
Yeah. So that's a good phrase there.
And we know that that is going to be probably a difficult issue anyway, so I think probably Calora has pushed that.
We haven't really gotten, we have no answers. They were barely asking the questions. But semantic versioning.
Still out there?
Yeah, I was just typing. I'm getting old. I can't type and talk at the same time.
Old.
Well, kids nowadays, they can be saying one thing, typing another thing, and listening to something else.
Texting.
And all of these new roles.
As quickly as you type.
Michael, did you see the note I put there in the chat box? I mean, what I'm hearing is that whatever we use to represent metadata needs to be modular.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, OMB is itself an ontology, so and I think OMB does recognize, they do have the notion of core OMB and different extensions to it. So, I agree there. Yeah, definitely.
So maybe that's the first change we should make: be able to import additional ontologies that represent, say, for instance, all the ranking stuff.
Hmm.
Or the configuration issues that we haven't completely defined yet. You're up, Ken.
Oh, okay. Let me talk about a couple of things. Like, Todd, you brought up the issue of modules for the metadata, and I can see a number of places where this would be pretty important. For example, the as ontologies go through various stages of approval, that kind of information would be independent of what we have in the OMB, partly because different groups will have different procedures and therefore different ontologies for expressing, these kinds of workflow issues. I mean, in some cases, there might not be any data of this kind at all. So that I think it would be very good to separate that, because we would expect variation. And then, of course, there's this, you know, it was, the issue was also brought up about configurations, which is certainly an important issue, especially as ontologies go through versioning. You know, one configuration may depend upon the versions of the various ontologies, as well as on what specific ontologies you have, and even possibly mappings between the ontologies. So all of this put together means that you do need some way of expressing all of this, and then, of course, the configurations themselves have versions, which kind of really complicates the issue, but I think in the long run, as we start getting into, you know, using the sandbox and using production version, these things are going to start coming up. I think they don't come up now because people just haven't tried these things.
Yeah, I agree.
One question about that, too, Ken, is that do you want to have repository metadata associated with the ontology? In other words, versioning is kind of like that, but also you might want to have like a where in the process and the workflow is this ontology?
Yeah, I think that's important, but, you know, what I'm pointing out is you got to keep that as a separate module because there will be different groups will have, you know, different kinds of data. You have to expect that there'll be more elaborate and less elaborate procedures that different groups will use. We can't assume a single size that fits all of this.
Right. Okay.
Well, I guess another sort of question too is, I mean, to what extent are we, like, when we're working, like, in our groups, I kind of, you know, personally, I'm kind of more on the content side and getting into the architecture just because I'm forced to. But how many of us are kind of more on that architecture side where we don't, we're kind of, like, just talking about we want to come up with an OR architecture and capability that can handle, you know, any kind of ontology rather than focusing on the content? Because that might be kind of one of the reasons why we're still kind of a little on the abstract side. You know, because we're just taking, you know, we're kind of, the sandbox gets populated by just kind of almost random ontologies. And so we're not really interacting with the repository in a way that maybe somebody, a real ontology user would be, right? So a real ontology user would say, you know, I need maybe a set of ontologies to do a particular kind of task, you know, some kind of, you know, supply chain management or something, e-commerce. And so I need to go to the repository to find, you know, a set of ontologies that match my requirements in order to build this e-commerce, support this e-commerce application. So the people who, the users with that sort of need are going to be coming at the repository, you know, they're going to be looking for ontologies with certain properties. And so that's where the metadata comes in. If we're approaching it more as, yeah, we're populating OOR with, you know, or maybe our favorite ontologies as opposed to the users of ontologies, then we might be missing that kind of our blind spot.
Michael, I don't think so. I think what we're addressing is some of the nuances that will come about as people, in your scenario, come and use things, because if there are dependencies on ontologies and people just randomly pick out parts of those dependencies, they're going to be very unhappy when they go to use them. Because they don't know that there are these other dependencies. It's, oh yeah, I had to pick up these other five ontologies. I don't think
right, but it's kind of. I think maybe what we need to do is reach out to people who are in that position of actually being ontology users. It's kind of like the same quandary I think that I find the students in my third year software engineering course kind of do when they're working on a project. Right? I mean, they don't have an actual customer, but they're supposed to do a software project. So when it comes to the requirements phase, you know, they almost have to do role-playing in order to come up with what the customer requirements are. And
well,
maybe in our case.
So the scenario that you provided is I'm very sensitive to it because I get stuck in that situation also when I go to try and find things, say, on the Raytheon intranet. there's a huge amount of stuff out there, and I don't really want to diddle around with how they've, if you like, curated it or whatever. I just want the damn stuff. So I haven't forgotten your scenario at all when we bring up, at least when I bring up these other issues.
Okay.
And unfortunately, a lot of, I understand what you're getting towards in that we could get so wrapped up with the architecture and implementation issues that we forget about the end user, which is the whole reason for doing this thing in the first place.
Yeah, and say, you know, it's kind of like, you know, one of my, you know, biases kind of is doing things in a very generic kind of, you know, abstract sort of way, more top down, and that, you know, kind of misses the use case approach. So, you know, I'm trying to just be sensitive to kind of maybe potential, I say, blind spots that we might have in the group that we need to...
Yeah, well, we'll have them anyway. We'll try our best to avoid them, but...
Well, do we actually have... Ken, do we have a kind of a repository of the current use cases, kind of using your use case... ontology for markup. Do we have a wiki page for that?
Yeah, I do.
But it's not markup, I believe. Is that correct, Ken?
What do you mean markup?
Well, kind of using your ontology.
It uses my ontology.
Okay.
So it is a...
You went back and marked up all those use cases, Ken?
I have a use case page, sure. Use case description.
No. We had all previously gathered use cases, I believe, for the OR prior to you coming up with your ontology.
We tried to incorporate as many of those as we could. I mean, they were all fairly informal. And we put out a call for people to contribute additional use cases. And so far, haven't gotten any more.
So maybe we need to... do a little bit of homework then to kind of revisit those and see, you know, kind of what demands those use cases place on the metadata that would be required for the repository.
Yeah, that sounds
good. Could you just post that link in the chat room, please? I just want to take a scan of that. I've forgotten where that was.
Can't even find our own stuff, huh?
Well, there are links to it in various places, but...
Hey, Michael.
Yes?
Frank is bringing up this issue of good old ISO 11179.
Right.
How well does the OMV address what's covered in that standard? No?
I think they're... that's a good question. Because my experience with 11179 has been it's traditionally been at a slightly higher level of abstraction. Frank can chip in here if I'm making any mistakes here. But it's kind of, you know, OMV is kind of at this lower level of abstraction where it's actually making commitments to a particular ontology representation language. Whereas 11179 is a little broader in scope and would be able to handle, kinds of... conceptual classifications that might not necessarily be written in an ontology representation language. So it's meant to be more of a registry as opposed to a repository. And as a registry, I think it has 11179 kind of different requirements on how the artifacts that it contains are described. Frank, you might want to comment on that?
I think Ken, if I may make one comment, we went through this when we discussed the workflow module on the architecture, and Ken actually gave us a sort of small paper discussing that. I'm just pasting the link now on the chat.
The whole issue of 11179.
No, not the whole issue, but the workflow module where I think they're putting in this keeper tool to implementing it with that, and then there's the the on that workflow module, the use of ISO 11179 is duly considered. But Ken is here, so he could talk about it in.
The Keeper, which is a prototype for the gatekeeping module, is definitely based on 11179. We went through that standard pretty thoroughly in an attempt to capture, what it was getting at.
Right, but 11179 is distinct from OMV. I mean, they're kind of, really apples and oranges and trying to compare this. I would.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the reason why I think the data associated with 11179, the registration, that should be a separate module.
Right.
We shouldn't get those two mixed up.
Yeah. So I have the link in the paper on workflow pasted on the chat board now.
Yeah, and I also posted the link to the page that has there's a page that shows the use case description ontology, and then it has two links to the use cases. One of them is a little easier to read, and the other is out of the raw.
Again, how does the registration impact or relate to the metadata? That is, what from the 11179 would have an impact on the OMV, whatever ontology is used for the metadata? Are they completely disjoint or independent logically?
Well, they can't be completely independent because you might want to search for ontologies based on this, where they are in their approval process.
Can we identify which pieces of this ISO standard need to be represented in some fashion in the metadata ontology? Or have you done that already?
We did that.
Oh, cool.
I don't think we incorporated everything.
The extension to OMV that we need straight away, correct?
Yeah. Essentially, that's what we did.
Okay.
But we didn't do all of 11179. We didn't feel all of it was needed.
Well, that's fine. Again, I don't think we should try and say this is the final word. And this gets to an issue of implementation in that the implementation should build stuff directly off this metadata ontology for those areas that need to be represented to the user or anyplace else in the system.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a stretch, but. Nice place to go.
So anyway, has everybody managed to find my, the use cases?
Yeah.
So I think
we really need to kind of use these in a kind of in a more directed fashion in the sense of looking at each of these and identifying how ontology metadata would be used in each of these. For example, the one in particular that jumped out at me was the use-administrated item map, right? A submitter registers a mapping from one item to another. That's I'm presuming that's like an ontology mapping, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, right. So then again, this kind of starts illustrating some of the needs we have for representing these kinds of ontology mappings. So I guess that would be kind of one way of looking at this, right? I mean, yeah, I would imagine that each of these use cases is not using the ontology directly in many cases, but using the metadata about that ontology.
Yeah, I don't know that any of them use the ontology that directly. Oh, yeah. Actually, they do.
Oh.
There's some that go directly into the ontology.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite a variety there.
Right.
And
so,
please contribute more.
No, but even with the ones we have here, I think this is the place to start in order to, because I think there's kind of a hypothesis here that Todd might want to falsify is that there is nothing that we have that conflicts with OMB as it currently stands, but that we need to be able to extend it in certain ways. And so, again, the first hypothesis is, again, there's nothing in that conflicts with OMB, so we can go through these use cases and identify and kind of show that, but at the same time then identifying what do we need to represent that OMB doesn't capture. Todd, does that sound reasonable?
Yes. I guess, Ken, do you mind if we put that information on the use case page itself? Or should we have create another page and let's link back to the use case pages?
Which information?
Oh, to either refute or support the hypothesis Michael just put forward.
I'd be happy to put anything you want on that page.
Todd, could you capture that onto the chatboard for now, at least as a placeholder?
Put it on the chatboard and I'll incorporate it.
Todd?
Yeah, back to Michael.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought maybe there's going to be a response there.
Yeah, he's typing.
Okay. So let me see if we just kind of go back and kind of my slide here. Anyway, if I look at the last two bullets in my summary, I guess we have the use cases, and it's up to us now to kind of go through them. Let's see. I suppose a good thing to do would be to have a deadline so that something actually gets done.
Absolutely.
How about June?
2013.
I'm serious about the production OOR because we can't, with a sort of good conscience, ask people to upload their ontologies when we know the URIs will break if it's not production. Because the whole idea of an OOR is that there's one place people can always find ontologies. And if we don't run a production version of it, the whole purpose is defeated.
Right.
Did we ever resolve the issue of how we are actually going to specify the URIs for these ontologies?
Good question.
We're not, but if we are using BioPortal, I mean BioPortal, once you upload, then the URIs are available. I mean, short of defining a different scheme, that's at least something we could start working with.
Well, I'm not exactly sure that's true. If you just upload an ontology,
yeah,
it's going to specify its own URIs internally. And then BioPortal assigns an integer code for it, which could be regarded as yet another identifier for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then that code doesn't have anything to do with what's in the ontology, which uses its own URIs. So, you know, in theory, you could have an ontology that imports using the BioPortal number, but I don't think I've ever seen that. See what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be different ways that you could identify ontologies at the moment with the sandbox, and there doesn't seem to be any compatibility between them or any relationship between them.
Okay, what if I move an ontology from the sandbox to a production box? Can one still maintain the same reference? Obviously not.
Well, that's the issue. I mean, how do we maintain a consistent a URI in a federated? I mean, it, going from sandbox to production is the same as shifting to another instance, hopping to another instance.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I agree.
We need one uniform way of specifying this so that we don't have these problems.
Great question.
No, because we've been running into that issue as well with Clory, in terms of coming up with the right kind of scheme for the URIs with the ontologies, particularly when we're doing the configuration, things are getting confusing.
Yeah, and then moving from version to version. Maybe Mike Dean could answer this, or has probably thought this over for years and years. Mike?
Sorry, Peter, I stepped away for a moment. I know I don't think there's a perfect solution here, but most ontologies will have, you know, a URI embedded in them. Sometimes that's just the base URI of the containing document. I think that's probably one way of identifying the ontology.
Right, and that URI is actually kind of independent of the actual, say, URL of the file that contains the description of that ontology.
Well, it can be. I mean, there's a convention, basically, of using relative document URL, basically, to refer to the ontology. But it may or may not be the same. It depends on how the base is set.
Right, we had this issue where we were using Google code as the host site. Right, so Google Code had a version repository for, you know, different versioning for our ontologies, and we're using Google Code to host everything because, you know, it has a nice way of getting new users, registering users, and so we didn't have to do all that infrastructure. But then that meant that all the files for the ontologies are actually, you know, have a Google URL, but we wanted the URI to be, you know, kind of separate from that, and so you're kind of always flipping between the URI for the actual ontology versus the file, and it's getting confusing.
Right. So you can use that by using relative URIs but setting the base. The other hand, it really is desirable that the ontology actually be resolvable at the URI that you're using.
Exactly.
But, you know, in general, I would certainly say, sort of in any case, you know, that the URI that the ontology developer used to identify it is probably the primary thing that should be used internally as well.
Yeah.
Then is moving from version to version already sort of properly researched and implemented, or is it still a research problem?
I would certainly say no. I mean, in theory, one can update URIs, you know, when you change versions and things like that. In practice, even looking at things like OWL2 and RDF as precedents, I've almost never seen it happen.
Yeah, we've had this issue just recently. We're trying to use OWL2 methods. With the version, the IRR, you know, combination of a relative IRI, the if you will, absolute IRI, and then the version number, you get into some issues.
So does that actually fall into the scope of metadata, or do we need a different workshop to ponder over this issue?
Yes, to both.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of it is best practices with respect to versioning, and I think those are still emerging.
But maybe this is not our problem, but a W3C problem.
Well, I think it's both. I mean, I think just in terms of people who are developing ontologies, they need a way of sort of operationally doing versioning. But you also need to make sure you capture the versioning in the metadata. So, for instance, a different version might have a different author, for example.
Yeah. And OMB does address versioning. So I could ask the OMB users a more specific question in terms of how OMB handles versioning. Are they happy with that? I mean, it may be the case that people in general are happy with versioning at OMB, but, you know, the versioning, they kind of put in a separate mental compartment. So, I mean, I suppose we could maybe have an upcoming session that just is on that, focusing on that issue. I guess you have to keep it like a focus as well. So what would we want to be the outcome of a session where we look at challenges for ontology versioning? I mean, do we want to simply raise questions, or do we want to discuss solutions, state of the art?
Well, if you want to stay focused, Michael, I think you should post a list of questions, and the discussion would be about possible solutions or answers to those questions. Now, the list of questions may not be complete, but it would be a start.
Right.
Looking at the ONV, I just see that version is one of the attributes of ontology.
Right.
That's it. There's nothing else.
I suspect from hearing this conversation, we probably have to have something about version history. The ability to go back and find out what that version history is.
Now, it seems like it really doesn't do much with versioning, in other words.
With versioning, it has resource location, identity. They have a couple of an illustrative example in that tech report where they come up with different versions of a particular OWL ontology.
Well, it does have a link called has prior version, and it's backward compatible with, it's compatible with, it's incompatible with. What does incompatible mean?
I think it's a typo.
I think so.
There's a couple others. Documentation is misspelled a couple places.
Oh.
Hopefully this was manually generated.
But should there be a different URI for each version, or is...
Well, OWL has some minimal versioning primitives, for example, and that pretty essentially does pretty much dictate that you actually have different URIs for each version, which tends to be problematic operationally.
Hmm. Well, that's a good question. Is a version really the same ontology, or is it a different ontology?
Well, that's what I was getting at with the notion of like semantic versioning versus kind of more of a software artifact notion, right? So semantically, right, an axiom is its an ontology is its axioms. And so if you actually, add new axioms, then you technically really have a different ontology. As opposed to other, more software kinds of notions of versioning where, you're correcting something, there's an inconsistency, you fix it, or there's syntactic issues or things like that.
Well, I mean, that's why they have the major and minor revisioning issues also, because your software could actually add new capabilities in the new version.
There's a fairly big discussion of some of this on one of the email lists a couple of years ago. I think it was Mike Ushold when they were discussed. They made a change that probably really should have been viewed as incompatible. And we're looking at whether or not to update the namespace.
By incompatible, Michael, do you mean logically incompatible or some other notion of incompatibility?
I think in this case probably logical, but with a minimal minimal amount of logic. And the fear, I think, was that basically changing the URI would cause way more pain and disruption than just kind of living with it.
Folks, I have to leave right now. Thank you.
Hey.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Leo.
I have to go also.
Oh.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michael, check the chat box. I had a hard time getting the send to work. I forgot I had my VPN connection on, so I think I'm not sure if I've captured exactly what I think I said earlier.
Okay, I'll take a look.
Thank you. Ciao.
Review OR use cases that will require additional elements for 1B, for elements of 1B that are consistent. Okay.
I got it.
So I think versioning is something that's important. I'm relatively naive on the issue, except in terms of how, again, we've experienced it from our perspective and just, you know, reading up on, things like the OMP documentation. It would be good to have someone be able to kind of give us a state of the art, appraisal of where everything is and Mike, you kind of have been at a lot of the ISWC conferences the past year or two. How prominent is versioning in papers that are submitted to those conferences?
I'd say it's kind of a recurring topic, but I don't think there's really any great solutions. I mean, Jeff Heflin did some early work on versioning, you know, and was kind of a proponent for the versioning features that were in the original OWL.
Right. Are there any obvious, pitfalls or whatever, problems with a naive approach?
Well, certainly, embedding a version number in the URIs, for things that are, certainly you wouldn't want to bump the version number very frequently.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of at the level of maybe you can live with one and two. You certainly, for the most part, wouldn't want to, be updating it for every build or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that gets into the workflow issues. I mean, you can put an ontology into a different state, where you're basically saying, okay, we're still working on it, and you can expect it to be changed, and so there'll be this minor version that will be modified, but then we're going to say, okay, now we're going to have a stable release, and that isn't going to change anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, one perhaps instructive example is Fulse. I mean, it's gone through a lot of updates, mostly enhancements and things like that, but the namespace is still 0.1. The version in the URI is still 0.1, so it's too painful to change it.
Right. Well, that just means that they haven't. Well, are they at a point where they have a stable release?
It's certainly been stable for a long time. Yeah.
So, but I was just, distinguishing this because in software at least, it's helpful to have these stable releases where you're not actually modifying the stable releases. But you then have this development version that goes through minor versions, and anybody who might want to use those better be aware that they will change.
Right. I mean, one thing that's certainly useful here, certainly at the level of the specific definitions of the documents, and I make a lot of use of it, is the OWL version info property, which typically I set to be the CVS ID of the document. So that's a way of kind of at least keeping a standard way of keeping track of the version numbers without embedding them in the URI.
But if you have a stable release, does it make sense to put the version number there?
In practice, in the URIs?
Yeah.
In practice, I've never seen that work well.
Well, we could require it.
But I thought I just heard him say didn't see it work well.
that seems like a way of basically shooing people away. But I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to see an example where people could make it work.
Hmm.
And like I say, partly I think it's a granularity question. I mean, mapping back from version 2 to version 1 is probably easy. If you're handling, you know, 10 or 15 different versions, it's probably going to get completely out of hand.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking there are two people that, you know, the two groups, not necessarily disjoint, but there are those who are developing the ontologies and those who are using them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think those who are using them would really prefer this kind of thing. And
well, I think it's how much they want to link with other data sets that use older versions. And how much they lose an ability to do that by getting the precision of additional precision that the version number would give them.
Uh-huh.
Well, so it seems like we have three possible kind of next steps here. I think in the near term, to go through the use cases that you know, are on the other repository that Ken put together on the pages, wiki pages, to really analyze them and kind of test this hypothesis that OMB we are compatible with the current OMB, and to identify those things that are required to extend OMB. So that's kind of a near term thing that we probably should set maybe a deadline within the next month to at least have a first pass at that. A longer-term issue, I think, is the versioning issue. We might want to maybe start identifying people who can really give us a good presentation of state-of-the-art and where we need to go with that. But that to me seems like a bit of a longer-term. Then the third point is Peter's point from the chat room about moving from sandbox to production OOR. To me, that kind of seems almost like the highest priority, because that really would focus on everything else that we do. So Peter, what do we need to do that? Like, what are the steps? I mean, is it simply just a matter of will, or what are there some technical things we need to kind of do in the next upcoming meetings to get that moving?
My understanding is, the one single thing that stopped us from standing up a production box is that we don't have gatekeeping. And I assume we can't have gatekeeping until we know exactly what gatekeeping needs to keep. Right. And essentially, it'll be a bunch of things, but front and central would be what metadata needs to be captured and checked or validated or whatever. So which means we need at least some initial agreed upon set. I mean, maybe it's just OMV as it stands, or that gets implemented into gatekeeping, the gatekeeper, which I assume the software is almost ready but not integrated into the current sandbox, and then actually implement that. And then we can set it up. Set is good synopsis. Ken has been doing the gatekeeping and probably is closest to helping us implement that piece into the current code.
Yeah, right at the moment, the problem is that the student that I had who developed the prototype graduated.
Yeah. Oh. That's the problem with students, right?
Yeah. Why did he do that?
He's a great student. But he's still around, and he's actually willing to help and act as a consultant. But I really couldn't expect him to take on the task of integrating the gatekeeper with the OOR sandbox.
I constantly see Tim Dar offering to help and Yuri Mylov. Could could we pass the state of where things are over to like Tim's group or Yuri in that sense? Tim is here. Yuri has locked off. But Tim, you want to comment?
Yeah, we would need to. I mean, it would need to align with our contract. But we'd be open to, you know, exploring that.
Mm.
I mean, we're on contract to develop to provide a repository. So, you know, I think there's an opportunity.
Yeah, that sounds like it is an opportunity.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, of course, I mean, we've got company people like Tim and Mike Dean, and we've got academicians like Ken and Michael. In the longer run, it probably would be better if these things are sort of researched and prototyped by students, but implemented by the company people. Would that be a good way to characterize it?
We also do some research, so that's, I mean, we're a research organization.
No, I remember what I mean is, I mean, your guys don't graduate as.
Yeah, we write code too, so we do a little bit of both. We're not real heavy research, but
right.
We would need to see more details about what exactly we would be tasked to do and what we could do.
Yeah, my point actually wasn't that you're doing or not doing research, but rather, I mean, in the company setting, generally the disciplines, the qualities are more consistent in
right.
The personnel as well.
Yeah.
As a general trend, Peter, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd be happy to work with with anyone to get these modules integrated and up and running in our production system.
Yeah. And in the spirit of rapid prototyping, we could just simply adopt OMB and see if it ever breaks.
Right, not running it as a production quite yet, but I mean running it on a production box, in a development box until we feel comfortable, and then we move that into production.
Yeah.
We have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
Okay, then maybe we can have one of the near term team meetings would really be, I mean, coming up with what code do we have and how do we deal with these codes? Transitioning from, let's say, Northeastern to KBSI or URI or BBN or whoever could pick it up and run.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, keep us very busy then.
Well, it is an open source project.
Yeah.
So
at least we can identify and partition pieces that can be doled out and worked on then. I mean, which is one of the problems we have been having all along. We don't have sort of pieces that people can take and run, even if they want to offer time and do coding and has the skills and so on. We never had that opportunity. One, we don't have the architecture. Two, we don't have the properly partitioned, palatable or bite-sized pieces that we can dole out.
Okay, so then how do we proceed? Oh, go ahead.
we are making progress on the architecture.
Absolutely, yes. I think we are making great progress these few weeks, which is great.
Okay, well, if you want to maybe just wrap up here then with the specific set of action items, what do we want to say? Because I think there's the one is actually if you use the use cases that we already have to evaluate adequacy of OMB. And then the other one seems to be moving, having a, an upcoming session that focuses on the production OOR issues. So are those pretty well the two action items are coming out of today?
It sounds good. Can you type that onto the chat?
I think we're almost kind of wrapped up here, I think, in terms of
right.
ideas.
Yeah. So it's just documenting.
So I just take those two action items in the session. So I don't know if there are any other... any other issues? I suppose you could wrap up for this week.
I had a kind of unrelated question.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I had promised Gary Bird-Cross I would ask about the status of updating the sandbox. He has some things that he would like to load once it's reset.
Could you repeat that again? Was that Mike?
Well, my understanding was that we were planning to update the sandbox to be running the forked code and plan to reset the entalities that were there as a result of that.
Yes, that was the plan. I don't think it's done yet, though.
Right. Do we have a sense of when that might happen? Or? Or should Gary continue to work with the current sandbox and just be aware that at some point it'll go away?
Oh, well, it'll still be there until next month. I mean.
Oh, okay. So next month is probably is when you're planning the upgrade?
Probably middle of next month, middle of April.
The Tejas is back in India. That's the person who made the installation. Ken, do you know when he's coming back?
I believe he's coming back in the beginning of April.
And hence your mid-April expectation, is that?
That's why I suggested mid-April.
Mm.
Okay, so I'll just suggest that he work with the current repository and save his work so he can recreate it once it's updated. So that'd be fine.
Oh, yeah, that sounds right.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Peter, do we want to actually set anything for the next meeting?
Next week we have the architecture workshop again. Right,
okay.
Ken?
Yeah, next week is architecture. Right.
So we could continue this conversation the week after that as part of a regular meeting and maybe focus on partitioning software responsibilities. Would that be a good session to do?
Well, I can't be there.
No?
Yeah, I'm going to be out for 2 weeks.
After next week, do you mean?
Next week I'll be around.
Yeah, next week since you're chairing. So next week is architecture API again. So maybe the week after that do we need to come back to metadata or?
Yeah, let's give ourselves like a month.
Right.
To kind of go through the use cases.
So maybe then the week after that, we'll just go back to a regular meeting to look at some planning issues then.
Okay, let's do that.
And then we talk about when at that meeting we'll talk about, we'll find out when Ken will be back. Ken, did you say after next week you'll be away for 2 weeks, or after next week you'll be away for 1 week?
I'll be away for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be back on April 11th.
So next week is architecture API again. After that, a regular OOR team meeting. Then there's another. Ken will be away until April 11th. Yeah, we'll figure out what we can do. Maybe after that regular meeting, maybe we pause for a week, or maybe we slip something else in.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan. So Michael, I took your three things and put it into a sort of takeaway this of the discussion. Can you review?
Okay. Oh, you put it on the session page?
Yes. If you refresh and take a look if those three things, or and everyone too, does that represent?
Yeah. That sounds good. Okay.
Yep. Hey.
So
great,
are there
meeting.
Any other comments then? All right.
No.
Well, I'll talk to everybody, I guess, next week for the
third
architecture workshop.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, thanks. Great meeting. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks.
Bye.